नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स। नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स। नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स। Have you noticed this thing in life? Some people, within a lifetime, their life change so much. And some people, for decades, hardly make any change in their life. Do you notice that? And why? What are the reasons? So today we are going to talk about this topic. What we are going to talk about today doesn't necessarily explain thoroughly such a phenomena, but to a great extent can help us to understand. You cannot say exactly answer. It's not the only answer for that. But to a great extent, it is very helpful for us to understand. And such understanding, it is helpful for our life. So we are going to talk about how to multiply our merits. What are merits? Merits basically are our capital that we need to help us to go through this samsara. When we go round and round in this birth and death, we need some capital to move on until we attain liberation. And this capital, we call it merits, and furthermore, we may also call it parami. Later we are going to distinguish this. So what are the merits that we are talking about? In the Buddhist context, in the Buddha's teaching, Buddha Sasana, what are the merits that we are talking about? Basically, it's all about karma. When we think, when we speak, when we do some actions, there's a karma. There's a karmic potency left over in our mind. And this potency is going to produce result. For that reason, it is our capital. It is the source of energy that we need to produce good result in our life. As long as we are in samsara, no one can say, I don't need such merit, I don't need capital. It's impossible. Everybody needs. Since we need, as long as we don't attain parinibbana, we need this. So since we need, then the question about the efficiency in cultivating merits become very important issue for us. So now we are going to talk about how we can efficiently cultivate our merits. What are the factors we need to know? What are the factors that can contribute to the efficiency of our cultivation of merits? So if you don't care about methodology, the method to cultivate merits, and you keep working very hard, very, very hard, but you don't care about the method to do it, then it's just like a person who wants to do business, but he doesn't care about how to do business. So such people who want to do business and don't know how to do business earn very little. They work very hard, but they earn very little. But people who pay attention on the method to do business, then they make a good business. So similarly, cultivation of merits is even more important than business. Much, much more important than business. Okay, let's pay attention in this this subject. Okay, now, in our life, two types of force are very important in whatever we do. Two types of force. You can classify whatever we will do. There are two types of force in our life that influence us so much. What are these two forces? One, intellectual force. Basically, wisdom. We call it wisdom. Intellectual force. Another is emotional force. Our feeling, our emotion. These things, whether we recognize or we don't recognize, they influence us, they govern us. Then since it is so, then we better learn how to make use of it. Look at our bodhisattva. In order to cultivate his parami, he needs the highest success possible in this universe, which is to become the Sammasambuddha. This is the greatest goal, nothing higher than that. To be a Sammasambuddha is the highest goal possible a person, a being can possibly aspire for. And what he did? He need these two forces. The intellectual force in the form of wisdom. For him is upaya kosala jnana. The wisdom in cultivating merit. The wisdom in cultivating merit. And then the second force, emotional force, for the bodhisattva was mahakaruna, great compassion. Basically, it's love. But for him, it's quite specific. This type of love is to liberate beings from suffering. So it's specific, very specific. But it's basically love. So this emotional force and this wisdom force, two, came hand in hand. Works hand in hand. Like the two wings of a bird. You cannot have one wing, you have two wings. The bird cannot fly with one wing, must fly with two wings. And for the bodhisattva, these two factors is motivating and driving him all the way to cultivate all other parami, all other merits. And this is not only for the bodhisattva, this is for everybody. We just take the bodhisattva as example. Because for him, the goal is highest. For the highest goal, he needs that. And if we apply that methodology in whatever lower goal or higher goal or same goal, it cannot be higher, same goal or lower goal you aspire for, then it works equally well. Very well. Emotional force and intellectual force. What are the foundations for these two powerful forces? What are the foundations for this? One is wisdom, another is emotional aspect. What are the foundations for it? So when we talk about the foundation, the basis on which we cultivate our wisdom, when we talk about wisdom, it's basically about natural law. Because without understanding natural law, without understanding the reality, there's no way we know the method, how to do good, how to achieve the result. When we say the bodhisattva knows the way, he has the know-how, how to achieve his goal. Basically, it's all about his understanding about natural laws and realities. And because of understanding natural law and realities, he could efficiently work on the right courses so that he got his right result. So, when we talk about natural law, basically, whether it is scientific, biologically, physics, or anything, you ask yourself, this all boils down to two things, causes and effect. It's just sometimes these causes and effects operate in physical world. Sometimes it's a mental world. Sometimes it's an interaction between physical world and mental world. But it's all about cause and effect. So when we talk about method, we talk about cause and effect. So when the Bodhisattva, he understood very well about the causes and effect, what causes will produce what effect, then he knew the method. And he, because of he knew the method, he strived correctly. Correctly, precisely, and he achieved his goal. That's the highest goal possible, and he achieved it because of that wisdom. Wisdom about method. And this wisdom is based on reality, based on nature law. Then the second, emotional force, the love. Specifically, we refer to Mahakaruna, great compassion, but basically it's all about love. Metta also involves Karuna, compassion also involves Mudita, appreciative joy also involves. And Upekkha basically is depends on wisdom. It's a foundation for the emotion. When we talk about Upekkha, basically it's a foundation for the Metta, Karuna, Mudita. Okay? So it's about love. And what is the basis of love? When we talk about love, the basis of love is our basically depends on our understanding, our workings of conventional wisdom, conventional truth. Because when you talk about love, it depends on beings. You cannot love without seeing beings. When you see everything as empty, then there's no love. You can have the similar to the basis for love, but it's not love itself. Love itself, it takes beings as object. So this understanding about beings become our basis of love. How well we can understand beings. This become our basis for love. The understanding of beings. Wisdom basically is understanding about conventional truth and ultimate truth. More important is the ultimate truth. But for love, you need to understand beings. Without having the understanding power, you don't know how to love. We don't know how to love. Only when we have a strong understanding power. For example, you meet someone who is terribly very evil, very cruel. Can you love? But for the Bodhisattva, he could. No matter how difficult a being, he could love. Why? Because of the understanding of being. Knowing that how these things come about. Knowing that how in the past, you also went through various stages of growth or evolution. So that deep understanding about oneself and others enable us to cultivate immeasurable, boundless love. Love which cannot be limited by any evil, cannot be limited by other people's defects. No matter what happened, you can love. That is a very wonderful, great power. But that depends on the understanding of beings. How well you can understand others, that's how well you can love. People who have no understanding power of other people, they are not able to love. They cannot love well. This is very important. So now, these are the basis for these two wings of our merits. So when we understand, oh, this For example, when you see evil, yeah, these people is doing all the bad. Then the mind cannot, when you cannot understand, you cannot accept, you cannot forgive, then very difficult. But if you can understand that, oh, in the past, I also have gone through all kinds of evolution, that is a great power. It cannot be shaken by other people's evil. So these two forces are very important. You have a drive. Love is a drive. If you want to liberate yourself because you love yourself, there's a drive. You want to liberate others and help others, there's a love and compassion for others. And you know the method, the wisdom, the methodology, you know. Then is the force is there. Then we talk about how to do it more efficiently. So when we talk about merits, or basically, it's all about, the main one will be dana, sila, bhavana, the giving, morality, and meditation. But it's not only that. All kinds of wholesomeness, every wholesomeness is actually a merit. It's actually our capital. So this, we need to know how to cultivate efficiently. So, of course, when we talk about wisdom in cultivating our merit, the wisdom about cause and effect is so important. We can never overemphasize this point. It's too important, cause and effect. But there's another more specific qualities which clearly decide whether we are doing it efficiently or not efficiently. It's also a type of wisdom. What are these sampajana? Clear comprehension, which is so important for our efficiency. First, sattaka sampajana. Clear comprehension of purpose. You see people who sometimes they go here, go there, sometimes they forget. So often we find meditators or Buddhists, they forget what is the original purpose they come into Dhamma. Or they come into monk life or nun life. Or they come into to be a committee to lead the association. So often we find people forget. At the beginning, yes, they want something good. They come in to practice and they come in to serve. After some time, they go astray, they forget. For example, when they get praise, they got the fame and name and respect and material gain. Then, very easy people who are lacking in clear comprehension of purpose, they forget. They forget, what's the original aim I came in? They forget. They get hooked up, they're tied down, bound by the good things along the way, name, fame, whatever, because of lacking clear comprehension of purpose. It's just like someone who wants to shoot a target, but after then seeing the flower, seeing the dog bark, and again, then you forget, what is my aim? What am I here for? You forget. So people who forget their aim is just like an archer who forget about his target. He forget he's going to shoot the target. That's the target he wants to shoot. But he end up looking at, oh, this is a beautiful object. Oh, this is a very ugly object. And he get distracted. And then he cannot forget his target. Lose sight of the target. How often Buddhists make this mistake? How often we find meditators make this mistake? Ask ourselves. So this is very important. You forget the target, you forget what are you here for, then finish. Many yogis, they come in, they meditate so hard, they forget they are coming here for purity. They go into competition with other people, they are jealous of other people's gain, they are jealous of this and that. They are so competitive, even in meditation.
How?
And they crave for Nimitta, crave for this. Of course we want Nimitta, of course we want jhana. But that one thing is chanda, not loba. If you have chanda, there's pure desire. If it's a loba, there's a greed. Greed is a craving. You know greed is a defilement. Now how can we achieve purity, the pure goal, with impure method? But people who forget their aim, then they forget, I'm here to purify my mind. Then they end up corrupting their mind. How often, ask ourselves, we make this mistake? So this is inefficient. Because once you lose sight of your target, it's just like a person taking the machine gun and simply shoot with the eyes closed. And simply shoot. And you lose all the bullets. You waste all the bullets, but hardly you get the target. But if you're a person who is clear, he has a cool mind, you can see the target, and just one bullet and shoot and get the target. You really need to waste a bullet. So in the same way, clear comprehension of purpose is very important. When we talk about this clear comprehension, basically the mental factor is wisdom. Amoha cetasika, non-delusion, actually is also panya. When we talk non-delusion, we are talking also panya. The mind is clear, is wise. So this is a mental factor for sampajana. Then the second sampajana, sapaya sampajana. Clear comprehension of what is suitable and unsuitable. What is the suitability? Clear comprehension. You are fully aware. Yes, I know my purpose, but is the method correct or not correct? You find sometimes you find Buddhists, you find meditators. They keep wanting to use the same way, even though the way doesn't produce its result anymore. Some mothers, some fathers, when they teach their children, not produce effect. You use the same approach, you scold and scold and scold. Now the children rebel. Still you want to insist on the same method and apply the same method for years and decades. How? They forget about suitability. When we talk about suitability, it talks about your awareness of the result it produces. And if you are fully aware of the cause and effect, so when you know this is the wrong cause, then you must abandon the cause. But people who don't have a clear comprehension of suitability, they will insist on doing the same thing even though that doesn't produce result. And sometimes even clearly produce harm. But because of the stubbornness, because of lacking clear comprehension of suitability, they insist on the same old pattern again and again. So their life never changed. How can they change their life if they are so stubborn to insist on the method which doesn't work at all or has not been working at all? So this clear comprehension of suitability is very important. So some parents, they teach their children so inefficiently they teach. They keep using the scolding method or comparing method. Compare my son with another people's son. Son, you're not so good. You look at other people's so good. Then the son gets hurt and then don't respect you. Still insist on the same method again and again. So these are the people who don't have a clear comprehension of suitability. So if a father and mother don't have clear comprehension of suitability, you see they spend a lot of effort, they love their children so much, they work so hard, but no merit. The children rebel. The children love other people's parents. So you see, so there's no merit in educating the children. There's no merit in that. Because you lack the clear comprehension of suitability. But for people who have a clear comprehension of suitability, you look at it, well, I try. Is it working? Is it the right principle? Is it fulfilling according to cause and effect? And will it produce result or not? And every now and then, check and evaluate. And then you know, oh, if this is not suitable, change. Just like our Prince Siddhartha. He practiced for 6 years the self-mortification. Then He's not there to torture himself. He knew he wanted to become the Buddha. He knew he wanted to achieve purity, to attain the deathless. And he knew he has exhausted all methods about self-mortification and came to no result, then he contemplates. What I have endured, no, this is the maximum already. No other past bodhisattva or future bodhisattva can endure, can tolerate more suffering than what I have tolerated. So this surely this is not the way. Then he let go and changed. Because of that change, he abandoned what was not suitable practice and he became the Buddha. If he did not have a clear comprehension of purpose, if he did not have a clear comprehension of suitability, he would might just torture himself until he died in vain. Die in vain. So this is very important. Then the third clear comprehension, Gochara Sampajana, clear comprehension of domain. For meditators, this specifically refers to our meditation subject. The work at hand, basically, in simple modern terms, we say the work at hand. What are you doing? What are you doing? If you are fully aware and remember and not losing sight of what you are doing, then you can do it well. But I tell you, many people, they forget. They do halfway, they get distracted by attractive object. They do halfway, they get distracted or frightened by frightening object or ugly object. Then they lose sight. They forget. Then, if, for example, if a monk go for Pindapata, suppose he pay attention on his object, either anapana or anything. But when he see, oh, this is good food, then the mind get attracted to good food, then forget meditation object. You forget what is your work. The work is to meditate. Then you forget. So it's like the pill that never gets full. The mindfulness always got the leaking. So, difficult to progress. So because you forget the work at hand, forgetful. If you are clearly aware, you have a clear comprehension of what you are doing, then you cannot be distracted by other things. So for the people, suppose people who practice Anapanasati, if you practice Anapanasati, if you have this clear comprehension of domain, that means you're fully aware that only either your breath, or the stable nimitta. Nothing else should concern you. Breath or stable nimitta. So one time, you can only have one object. So if you have clear comprehension of domain, what will happen as for a meditator who practice Anapanasati? You're fully aware of this breath. Then halfway, Bodhisattva come, the Buddha appear. Mission, okay, it's not my concern. You know? Let the Buddha come and go, never mind. Then Mara come, ghost come, demons, Asura coming. No problem. No problem. It's not my object. My object is this one. Thank you. This is a way when meditators have clear comprehension of domain. You stick to it. Then until you see light here, light there. Okay, this is not stable nimitta. They are not nimitta yet. But even if it stick and superimposed with your breath, so bright nimitta, but it's not stable. Okay, no, I'm not going to pay attention to what is not stable. Because you know the method already. You know, what is not stable is not going to be to enhance your concentration. Only when a stable object can strengthen your concentration. So you, because of that, okay, sorry, no problem. Don't get distracted. Here. Then, very fast you get your concentration, you pick up. Very fast you attain jhana. But, how many people can do that? They get distracted so easily. So easily. They chase after this light, chase after that light, and greed. They have such a strong craving and greed for the light, and how? Forget. So this clear comprehension of purpose is very important. To be efficient. To work efficiently. Because to get concentration is just like people who use a primitive way of starting the fire, you know? You put a wood on a hole and you know? drill, something like that, and then because of the friction, the spark comes up, and it burns the dry leaves, and then it starts the fire. So you have to do it continuously. I see my students recently in China, so many of them, they just don't care about other people. They just follow instruction. Within a few days, they get jhana. Few days. People who practice for years cannot get jhana. But they got few days, they got jhana. One even went up to third jhana within 10 days. These are the people who can work efficiently. Very clear. I'm coming here, what for? I'm coming here to meditate. I'm not coming here to talk. I'm not coming here to look at other people, to count other people's cows. I'm counting my cows. How well people practice doesn't concern you. You should concern about your own practice. Be very practical. And such people, they meditate within a few days, they get concentration, they pick up very fast. All have these common qualities. All of them. It's about 10% in one retreat. All got jhana. And half of them are first-timer in meditation retreat. First time. Why? Because of clear comprehension of domain. Remembering what are you doing. So, continuously, day after day, you know, the energy, the pickup, the momentum pickup, day after day, stronger and stronger. Because of the repetitive condition. Repetition condition. Then you become very forceful. So this is very important. So the last clear comprehension is clear comprehension of non-delusion. Basically, it's wisdom. When you see reality, there's anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanent suffering, and non-self. There's no ego there. Then you can efficiently, you can serve very well in a selfless manner. Last year, December, I went to a Buddhist country. I saw a stupa, newly finished. Very beautiful. It was built by one single person only. This person, very hard, he worked 30 years to accumulate the material, precious material, to build that stupa. Of course, we have to praise. We are not going to say, we are not going to despise. Anybody doing any good, we should not find fault with them. No, we are not going to find fault with people, other people's kindness and other people's wholesome deeds. No. We just feel that it is pitiful. Because he did everything alone and he did not let other people participate in his wholesome deed. So that he had all the merits to himself. Is this a good way of doing merits? What do we call merits? When we do something good, when we do a dana, it is meant to help other people to be good. Isn't it so? So that the Buddha's teaching can flourish. Now we want to build a hall here. You see, in Nandaka. For what? For other people for the meditators, all future generations, all other people are going to get this benefit of learning the Dhamma, practicing the Dhamma here. So if you understand these merits come from benefiting others, then if you want merit, you must care about benefiting others. So if you care about benefiting others, why do we need to monopolize any merit? We just let people share, no problem. More people share, more people get the merit, it is good. When you wish for other people to get married, can your merit become less? No. Your merit only become more. Because you do it selflessly. You do it with pure love for others, for the welfare of the world, for the long lasting of the Buddha's dispensation. So this, because you are, even though you to be really asamva sambhajana, you must know at least namarupa paricharanyana, at least a clear distinguishing about materiality and mentality. You must see ultimate reality to come up to real asamva sambhajana. But at least you have something closer to it, not to be deluded, not to be caught by this I, this selfish I. No. So if you can do, you have this wisdom and you perform the marriage, wonderful. I can say, if this person, he got a good counsel for the Dharma 30 years back, and he really understood, maybe he got a counsel, but maybe he could be stubborn, I don't know. But if he really could change his mental state, all his 30 years of hard effort to build a stupa, the marriage will be many, many times, I would say maybe even 1,000 times more than what he got. I'm not despising him, I just feel pitiful. What a waste. 30 years effort is no easy task. 30 years accumulate, that stupa could easily cost, I think, oh, I don't know how much. It's so costly. It must be very costly and beautiful carving and very good quality materials. But pitiful. So this is very important. When we do something, we don't do it with a selfish ego. We do it with a selflessness. Then you have something closer to Asambhava Sampajana. But better still, if you have the Vipassana insight and you practice until you see ultimate realities, you know causes and effect, you see, then you practice actually like that, then when you perform your dana or anything, you'll be first class. So this is very important to produce efficient results. And in fact, there's so much more to tell. This is the basic and very important thing. Like spontaneity. When you want to do good, don't hesitate. If you want to renounce, renounce right away. That's why you see the during the Buddha's time, many people could just attain arahantship very quickly. Why? They don't hesitate. When they met the Buddha, oh, this is the Dharma, real. Then they just renounce. They don't even think about going back. Of course, later, the Buddha laid out the conditions that they should ask permission. But early stage, many people, they just renounce. See, and for dana also, the person who wait until the last watch of the night to dana, his only garment, he got a lot of return. But the Buddha say, if he did at the first watch, he could get 16 times more than what he got. So spontaneity, if you really think this is good, of course sometimes you have to contemplate to make sure you do it well, not to do it in a haphazard manner. If you want to do anything good, do it with wisdom. But don't hesitate. Should I give? Should I not give? Should I help? Should I not help? If it is, you know, if you are very sure it is beneficial, it is good, then just let your heart be free. Just do. Then your merit is many, many times faster, more powerful. So when we want to perform merit, before we perform, when we perform afterwards, make sure we have no regret, make sure our mind is bright, make sure we don't fall into the sense of I, the ego, the wrong view of self, and then the craving, this is mine, my merit, like that. No. If you have Asammoha Sampajana, clear comprehension of non-delusion, then this one can easily be conquered, easily can be overcome. So these are the how we can perform merit well. Since you are doing, do it wholeheartedly. Don't do it half-heartedly. Whatever you want to do, we do wholeheartedly. It makes a big difference. You meditate with a half-hearted mind, it's big different. You meditate with a full force and real interest, real respect for the meditation object. Efficiency is very different. So these are the things that we can cultivate. Don't blame on the past parami, oh, I was lacking in parami. No, what we can cultivate in this life now, make sure we do it first. Get it right first. Before you talk about whether, oh, because I'm not lacking parami. No, don't do that. What we can do, there are a lot of things that we can do and we can perfect it here and now. Don't complain and blame on the past. No. If you do that and blame on the past, then in future you'll blame on the present also. Okay, when we meet the Maitreya Buddha, you still will complain, oh, I have no merit. During the Gautama Buddha's dispensation, I did not perform merit, so now I meet the Maitreya Buddha, also Maitreya Buddha could not help me. So this is no. We just have to cultivate strong merit. So if you want to do anything, dana, sila, bhavana, giving, observing morality, and practicing meditation, do it wholeheartedly. Okay? So it's a limited time. I just share, actually there are more to talk about how to improve our efficiency. But these are the main things. I hope it will help you. One is our emotional aspect. Make sure you do it with love for yourself and for others, now wholeheartedly. And wisdom, know the cause and effect, the method. Care about the method. And for clear comprehension of purpose, suitability, and remember your domain, your object at hand, and then don't fall into defilements of wrong things, you know. Have clear comprehension, have wisdom, clear comprehension, non-delusion. Or at least something near to that. Not exactly so, because exactly you have to see ultimate reality, but at least you have something similar or close to clear comprehension of non-delusion. That will be helpful enough. And then do it wholeheartedly. Wholeheartedly. So, before I end, I want to emphasize on methodology. The Buddha, when the Buddha gave us the Four Noble Truth teaching, he presented to us a very powerful methodology. This you can apply anywhere in your business and anything. First, identify your problem, the suffering, unsatisfactoriness. Identify the origin, the reason. You have to discover the reason. Then you must know the goal you want. What's the ideal? What is the result you want? People who don't even know what is the result they want, it's very difficult. And in this sense, Four Noble Truths, the result is the cessation of suffering, which is happiness. Then the way leading to it. So it's very bright. You see, it tells you the problem, the suffering. It tells you the solution of the problem. Very balanced. But modern days, many people, they like to grumble. They like to talk about problem, but without making effort to find solution. They just grumble. They just waste so much mental energy, physical energy, resources, all on dwelling with the problem only. Of course, we need to know the problem. We need to understand the problem in order to solve it. But that's enough. But brooding on problem never makes us any good. So this is very important. It happened to meditators. So many meditators, sometimes we are so tired when we give interview. They come in, they tell a lot of problems. We already, in fact, suppose 5 minutes, usually a meditator should only spend 2 minutes about reporting and 1 or 2 minutes get the instruction and maybe a few clarify the instruction. But no, meditators, they talk about their problem, then you give them the solution, they don't listen, they don't get it. And then they feel very satisfied with the interview. So some, they go, oh, Bhante, you are so good. You listen to my problem. I'm so satisfied. You are the best teacher. So they praise us. I say, oh, wonderful. You appreciate, so appreciative. Then I ask, so, okay, just now I gave you the way how to solve your problem. Can you repeat it to me? They forget. Completely blank. So satisfied with the interview. Satisfied in expressing. But not satisfied in receiving. Even though the instruction already given, but not captured. This happens very frequently. They forget the purpose of interview. It's to get the solution, to get the guidance, to learn the methodology. Actually, you are talking about the past. Reporting is about the past. But reporting is about learning methodology. So people who forget, that's very pitiful. So you must develop a very balanced character in your life. Problem, yes, I must be brave enough to tackle the problem, but to see the problem, to understand the problem, but I must be practical enough to look for a solution and work on the solution. This is Four Noble Truth. So with that, I hope this will help you to live a very more efficient life. The efficiency in cultivating merits is basically efficiency in living our life. It's actually the art of living. So I hope this will help you to change or make your life much more efficient. So there are many other multipliers. This is only part of the talk. So there's, when you talk about efficiency in cultivating our marriage, there's so much more to talk. How to multiply, how to strengthen our marriage. For example, with the power of concentration and with the beautiful mental states, 19 beautiful mental states, wholesome, in all wholesome consciousness. And there are many qualities, the six paths, you know. These are the things, well, I have no time to talk, elaborate further on that. But these are the things that we can, if we learn and we cultivate, it can help us to strengthen our marriage much, many times. Many, many times. So since we are doing, if we work a little bit on cultivate, I mean, in methodology, then you'll find that instead of rushing and keep doing, you do efficiently, you do wisely, then you find your marriage accumulate in a very efficient way. Okay, with that, I hope all of you live a better life and bright, and then hopefully this will help you and transform your life and make your life best and most beneficial for yourself and for all those around you and for others. I also wish everyone well and healthy and happiness and peace, and with the power of Dharma, may you be able to conquer all causes of suffering and cultivate all causes for happiness and fulfill, be able to conquer greed, anger, delusion, cultivate perfect sila, virtues, concentration and wisdom, and may all your noble wishes be fulfilled, and may you be able to attain the path of fruition and nibbana. Okay, so please recite after me. Idam me punyam asavakaya vahang hotu. Idam me punyam nibbanasa pachayo hotu. Mama punya bhagam sabba sattanam bhajemi te sabbe me samam punya bhagam labantu sadhu sadhu.